This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This show is powered by you. That's right, you. The lovely people buying their wares through the voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon portal. The beautiful, strong, hopefully moderately wealthy, cocksure people that bookmark voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon and do their shopping through the click-through link. You all achieve just a little bit more superstardom every time you buy something and help out the show. Just go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon. We thank you. This is the KMP Show, and I am your host, John Playtech, with you for the duration of this KMP Shorty. Rich is not able to make it today. The thing is, when we started this show, Rich and I, we have a goal in mind, and I believe that that communal goal is to provide be successful. Isn't that everybody's goal, really? But it's to be, to provide a lot of content, to be successful through providing a lot more entertaining content. So every once in a while, from time to time and at various times, I may come at you with a KMP shorty where it's either just me, or maybe, if I'm disposed, it may be just Rich. He may record something and upload it for you guys. It's not, we're not trying to change the show. We're not trying to do away with what has been a quite successful beginning. It's just, I come from the podcasting school of thought that instead of, say, one or two long episodes a week, it's better to spread out that content, that episodic content, over the week. So instead of, say, a 1 hour or a 1 day a week, 3 or 4 plus hour show, which Rich does in the Voices of Wrestling main podcast, I'm of the school of thought that, hey, let's take this show and we'll spread it out over a couple of days. That way we get the added bonus of being able to do more, because instead of 1 4-hour show, what about 4 days of 1 hour, 1 hour 15, 1 hour 20 minutes? That way, effectively, you get more content. And what's more, the content that you bring in the daily show or in the multiple times per week versus one time per week tends to be more topical. It tends to be more on point, on message with what's going on, whereas you have to wait and kind of hope that that what you want to talk about is still at least tangentially relevant when your record date is like 4 days from now, a story breaks, and you're like, oh, gee, I really want to talk about this, but is it going to remain in vogue until, say, Sunday when we record, or Monday, or next Monday, or next Tuesday, whatever? So we are going to bring you as much content as possible. It may just be one of us from time to time. Sometimes our schedules won't allow us to be in studio. We have, don't worry, we have other ways to record and maintain a very, very high quality that you'll be hard pressed to find from other what I would say amateur professional podcasts, that intermediary between like guys talking through their laptop notebook, like the microphone on their laptop, and then somebody like Adam Carolla, the Nerdist, Bill Simmons, etc. So we're in that amateur professional kind of range, and I think our sound quality and our content and our quality will be right up there. So this is the KMP Show, episode 3. It's a shorty. You've got me for the next half hour. Maybe I've already burned through, I don't know, 4 minutes. So that's good. He's good. We got a lot to talk about today. It's the day after the Super Bowl, but you can follow me on Twitter. Stay up to date with the latest and greatest KMP Show news with me at John's Voices on Twitter, J-O-N-S Voices on Twitter. You can also follow the KMP Show on Twitter at K&P Show. That's K-A-N-D-P Show. On Twitter. So go there, follow the show. You'll stay up to date when episodes are coming, what we're talking about, maybe we'll introduce some Twitter bits. I have some ideas for stuff there. Tweets of the week, tweet of the day, etc. Bad sports takes. We'll bring you bad sports takes, which will basically just be this show. Like, Like, a bad sports take of the week goes to basically everything the KMP show did. So we thank you for following us on Twitter. I'm at John's Voices, J-O-N-S Voices, and of course, K-A-N-D, K&P Show on Twitter as well. Again, the click-through link is at voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon. Go ahead and bookmark that. Whenever you go shopping on Amazon, if you click through that link, you help out the show. Everybody loves helping out the show. You help out the show grows. The show, we can have more episodes. If we get very lucky, this can become a supplementary source of income, or maybe even a pie in the sky, the main source of our income, as is possible now in today's podcasting world. It wasn't when we started 643 Sports. When we started 643 Sports, podcasting was, we didn't even know what podcasting was. It didn't even, I don't think it was even called podcasting at that point. We just, we did a live show. We tried to replicate the sports talk shows that Rich and I enjoyed. And we did, let's be honest, a bad job, but we were learning, we were trying, and what we didn't know, what we honest to God didn't know, was at the time, in circa 2008, this is right around the time, Adam Carolla, the patron saint of podcasting to many people, really, Adam Carolla had just gotten fired or let out of his contract, or he was like, I'm not renewing his contract. I forget, there's a whole story there with how Adam Carolla left KLSX or KL. AX, whatever the call sign is out there in LA. He had a very successful terrestrial radio show, and then in 2008 didn't renew his contract, and the next week, to hear him tell it, he started the Adam Carolla Show and really began and popularized what has become podcasting. Well, Rich and I were doing that with 643 Sports way back in the day, right around 2008. We had no idea what we were doing. We had no idea what it was, what it could become, what it could be. We had absolutely no idea. So, you know, it is possible now. It wasn't then. I think Adam Carolla was probably operating at a big loss for those first couple of years, but he identified and he was like, nope, this is going to be the thing. And it's turned out to be that thing. So you want to help it be a thing for us, Rich and I, go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon, as well as Stance. This segment is brought to you by Stance. By breathing life into something that had been previously overlooked, Stance has ignited a movement of art and self-expression that has drawn athletes, performers, and iconic cultural influencers to the Stance brand. Stance is now the official sock of the NBA and will be unveiling their first line of underwear this year. Get yourself some slick footwear and comfortable underwear at voicesofwrestling.com/stance. That's voicesofwrestling.com/stance. All right, so this is the episode after the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 50. And Rich and I, don't worry, people, we are going to be breaking down the X's and O's. We are going to be going through play-by-play when we record probably tomorrow or Tuesday when you hear this. So don't worry, you will get our play-by-play, quarter-by-quarter probably. You know, I don't know. I was thinking drive-by-drive. You know, I got it saved on my DVR, and I was going to break it down. I got notes. But, you know, drive-by-drive, it's you know, it doesn't really fit the show format, so we're going to go quarter-by-quarter. No, we're not. We're not doing any of that. But we will talk about things that we found funny in the Super Bowl. Observations we had about Peyton Manning and Cam Newton, the game as it was. That was bad football. Okay, I'm just going to say that now, and you are free to disagree with me at John's Voices on Twitter and at K&ANDP Show on Twitter. You're free to disagree with me all you want, but that was bad football. I know a lot of people are saying in the wake of it, I saw the ESPN coverage, and certainly today people are hailing it as a defensive matchup, a return to the yonder days of football where men were men and women were grateful and nobody could throw the ball downfield with any regularity, and we called that defense, by golly. Now, don't get me wrong, Von Miller put on a hell of a show, a damn good show at Super Bowl 50, very much deserving of the Super Bowl MVP. Far and away, I held out hope for my boy Graham Gano, but just wasn't to be, especially when he missed that field goal. But and I was right about a defensive player that's being smart money on the prop bets. It's just the wrong team, wrong player, bad sports thought. But Von Miller had a great game. But I think that people are tending to overlook, Cam Newton was just missing a lot of people with his passes. He was throwing laser beams all over the field. They just weren't really aimed all that well at people. And there was a lot of fumbles. And now, okay, how do you chalk up turnovers? Do you chalk up turnovers to a lack of discipline in the ball carrier or whomever is possessing the football? Do you chalk that up to that? Or is it more of what the defense has been able to do? Can you get to the quarterback, get to the ball carrier, put your helmet on the ball and knock it out of there? Everybody has their own take and their own mix on what is what when it comes to turnovers. A lot of people like to think of it, oh, look at that defense forcing turnovers to the point where they're now called takeaways instead of turnovers. The onus has been shifted to the defense for taking the ball away from the offense rather than the negative onus being placed on the offense for how could you give up the damn ball, you bunch of idiots? Hold on to the damn football. I'm more of the old school. Hold on to the damn football. Now, I will give you, again, Von Miller's pressure, blindside pressure on Cam Newton, knocking the ball out of his hands in the act of before he can, you know, the tuck rule, wherever that kicks in there, and getting to him and knocking the ball out. Actually, just kind of in that first fumble that turned into a touchdown, just taking the damn ball from him. Give me that crap. It's mine. And I'll give you that. But, you know, when you put your head down, when the running back puts his head down and just gets hit and the ball just kind of pops loose, I put that more on the offense. You hold the damn football. And Cam Newton was missing just, again, hell of an athlete. You wanted to see how hard Cam Newton could throw a damn football. You saw it yesterday. But if you're not hitting your targets, Peyton Manning is already throwing lame ducks. Peyton Manning's been a duck thrower all season long, and that's what you saw for 60 minutes was a guy with tremendous talent, tremendous arm strength, couldn't really hit anybody. And you also saw another aging old guy who, well, early on in his career could kind of throw laser beams, but certainly can't anymore, and couldn't really find anybody. It was on pace early on in the game to be one of the worst passing Super Bowls ever. And it got to the point where I believe it was the third quarter. The Broncos came out, had the ball in the lead, and they were content three and out punt. We're going to use every second of the play clock. We're going to use every second we can. But Peyton Manning, you are not allowed to throw the football anymore. I guess you have to give kudos to them a bit for understanding who their players are, who their quarterback is, and saying, okay, well, we're going to take the ball out of your hands, Peyton. Your job now, as Phil Simms put it, to be very careful with the football. Phil Simms actually said that during the broadcast. Peyton Manning's job now, be very careful with the football. Like, no shit, Phil. When is it ever not Peyton Manning's job? Has any coach ever told Peyton? Now, Peyton, here you go, Peyton. Here's what we're going to do, okay? We don't really give a shit about this football, so you just go out there and you do whatever the hell you please with it. You just throw it to the other team if you want. Just hand it to them. Here you go. Nobody, no, Phil. That is every quarterback, every possessor of the football's job is to be very careful with the football. That's his job. He's a quarterback. That's what he does. Well, you know, Peyton, it's Phil Simms, get him off my TV. I'm done with him. Sick of him. Tired. No more for you, Phil. CBS has been forcing you on a national audience for way too damn long. I'm sorry. You've got a whole bag of nothing. You've got a whole bag of nothing that you say. You know, we talked about it. You know, Jim, we talked about it. Stop talking about it and actually say something, Phil, of worth that actually makes some kind of sense. But it was one of the worst passing games, one of the worst passing Super Bowls, and that's not fun to watch. And when the Broncos had the ball late and Peyton Manning's job was to be very careful with the football, the game got boring because They tried to run the ball, and it was just 3 yards in a cloud of dust, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, 3 yards, cloud of dust, punt, rinse, repeat. And we are going to make you beat us. And that's where the NFL has kind of shifted. The NFL has kind of shifted. All these coaches, all these play callers, all these coordinators, they think that they've got it's like the missile codes. They think they're controlling the nuclear-tipped ballistic missiles with their offenses, and they've become such slaves to this dogmatic, never go for it, never try to put your foot on somebody's throat and twist, never that. It's, we got the lead, and we are just going to sit on this football as much as we can, and you can try to beat us. And it worked. It worked, of course. They've got the Super Bowl rings. Peyton Manning is drinking his Budweiser after making out with Papa John on the field, whatever. But I just, that kind of football, especially on the grandest stage, the Super Bowl, whatever the Nielsen rating was, whatever their share was, huge, probably record-setting yet again, as they've done every year, set records in Nielsen ratings, that seemed like a bad look. Like, okay, now we've got this precarious lead in the final game of the season, the Super Bowl, and we're just going to revert to just lame-ass, boring football. And I started to lose interest in the game. I really did. I don't know if anybody else did, but I was watching this game and I wanted to see, I'll be honest, I like Peyton Manning. I don't know why I have to be honest about it. Let me be honest and tell you something that a lot of people think. I like Peyton Manning and I wanted to see him do well. I also like Cam Newton, so no, I'm not a racist for liking, for wanting Peyton Manning to do well. I wanted to see him throw the football. I wanted to see the old sheriff, old number 18, have one last game, one last. Let me go out there and win you this football game. And he didn't do it. The defense did it, to their credit. But I think it was just the game, for my tastes, the game got ultimately very, very just lamed. It turned into a prodding, tactical, more strategic than tactical, if you want to get super technical about it. It just became the strategic battle of punting and try, and Riverboat Ron wouldn't go to the riverboat. You're Riverboat Ron, okay? And you've got a 4th-and-3 in Bronco territory. You're down 6. There's 6 minutes left in the game. Why aren't you going for it? That is a textbook Riverboat Ron moment to like be like, fuck it, we're going for it. What did he do? Punt it away. Let's play the safe game. And you got two teams that until the final 2 minutes, until Carolina finally got the ball for that last drive, you had two teams that were just scared of playing offensive football. And it wasn't, it became not fun to watch. It became more about, okay, what are the funny things are Phil Simms going to say? And are there any funny commercials? And by my count, not many funny commercials, but the saving grace of the Super Bowl of Super Bowl 50 was the post game, because Cam Newton, after losing, zero dabs from Cam Newton. I had a dab count going on Twitter. John's Voice is on Twitter. Zero dabs for Cam Newton. Zero. He got to dab 0 times, unless he snuck one in and I missed it. Had a few Lagunitas, but no dabs for Cam Newton. Cam Newton upset, ostensibly at the loss, of course. And in his postgame press conference, which lasted a grand total of, as I saw it, 3 minutes. 3 minutes of, there was one substantive answer. There was one from Cam Newton, and it was filled with the standard football platitudes and truisms of, they just play better than us, we got outplayed. But from the word go at his post-game press conference at Super Bowl 50, Cam Newton was a man who looked pretty pissed off, a man who looked glum, mopey, down. He didn't want to be there, didn't want to answer your questions, ain't have no time for that. He didn't have time for it, didn't want it, didn't want to do it, didn't want you to think he wanted to do it. He didn't want anybody near him, anything, fine. And he's getting dragged over the coals for it today. Of course, there's a lot of schadenfreude. There's going to be a ridiculous amount of that following the loss of by Cam Newton of this Super Bowl, because he was the guy organizing team photos with the game still going on, which was funny. He's the guy dabbing at people or doing his dance in the touch. I think, what was that gif? Is that the dab? It didn't look like a dab. It looked like something else. He did like he put his arms up and he kind of tilted. I don't think that was a dab in the truest sense of the term, and then somebody on the Titans got pissed off at him, and he did it again after he came at him. That's Cam, like, that was the Cam Newton of the 2015-16 NFL season. And now you lost. And you lost in a pretty bad way. It wasn't like you got handled. It's just you were ineffective. You, Cam Newton, ineffective. And you lost the ball a few times. Of course, you know, I defy anyone to have Von Miller, that angry man rushing at them from the blind side, who's just, and you can't see him, you're looking downfield, and he just hits you. Hold on to the football. Try it. Just give it a shot. See if you can do it. Probably can't. So he's going to get a lot of flack for that. There are going to be people that are just looking to be really excited at Cam Newton not being that guy this Super Bowl. And, of course, people rush to defend him, rush to say, this is Cam Newton, this is what you got, this is what you get with Cam Newton. He's a guy that wears his emotions on his sleeve. When he's happy, he's happy. When he's seeing the when he's feeling the highs, you will see him, he will channel that to you. You will see him happy. And when he's sad, when he's down, when he's upset, you will get that as well. And I agree. That works for people that say, I love Cam Newton because he's being emotional. If you are a person that says, I love Cam Newton because he shows emotion, you cannot then be mad at Cam Newton for showing emotion during his post-game press conference at Super Bowl 50. You just can't do it. You're the hypocrite. Not Cam Newton, you. You are the hypocrite if that's what you do. However, let me say this. I don't like how Cam Newton acted at his post-game press conference. And let me tell you why. Two-pronged, two phases to my dislike of this. Not anger. Not angry that a millionaire was just kind of aloof in a post after the culmination of what has been an arduous, I don't know what. They start in July. And it's in February. Okay, so an arduous 8-9 months. I'm not going to be mad at him for that. I'm not angry, upset by it. But I didn't like it. First of all, you get up and you cut out on the media. Now, this is regardless of the argument that Cam Newton was hearing a Broncos player press conference going on in the next booth behind him, and he was sick of hearing the guy lambaste. Or lambast, however you want to say it, Newton's performance and bragging about their Super Bowl victory. Regardless, irrespective of that, every Super Bowl loser ever has heard that same thing. That's been the setup, the press setup at Super Bowls for the longest time. It's one room, and it's for the media so that they can go from station to station and catch as many post-game pressers as they can without having to like try to hustle and bustle between two locker rooms. So save that, stow that argument, because countless other Super Bowl losers have had to deal with that, and they didn't do it in the same way Cam Newton did. Now, the first reason why, what I don't like about it is that, listen, post-game press conferences, even and especially when you lose, are part of your job as a professional athlete, especially one who is the face of a franchise in Cam Newton. You are there. Part of your job description is to be there in the good times and the bad to face the firing squad of guys that get paid, maybe are salaried at $60,000 a year to follow around younger, hotter, richer millionaires. These are guys. It's about not understanding what allows you, Cam Newton, to be that. And the press is a part of it. They aren't the reason. If the press corps went away, if the press corps was not allowed to be at Super Bowl 50, the Super Bowl would still set Nielsen records. It still would. So I'm not saying, oh, well, the press are the reason why you get paid, Cam Newton. No, but you know what? It's a part of it. How big of a part? I don't know, but it's a part of it. And these are guys and girls and quote professionals who follow sports around, who are lucky to have salaries to follow sports teams around and write inane things and ask asinine questions of multimillionaires, but it's still their job and it's part of your job. Play the game just a little bit longer. Just play the game just a little bit longer, 5, 10 minutes, whatever it is. It sucks. It hurts. I can't even imagine how much it sucks and hurts for somebody that has made that their life, their profession, but it's part of the job in winning and in losing. And when you cut a press conference short, when you just walk out on the press corps, you're cutting off at the knees something that in part allows you to do what you do. And I don't like that from just be cool to one another, people. Just be reasonable to one another, and society would probably be a whole lot better. So if Cam Newton could at least have an understanding of, like, listen, you know what, these guys, they're just trying to do their job. Yeah, sometimes their questions suck, and sometimes they do try to hold sway over you, like, haha, gotcha, Cam Newton. But it's their job. And me interacting with them, me allowing them or even helping them to do their job, which is part of my job, it kind of allows for this whole thing we got going on. It's not the sole reason, yet again, but it's kind of the reason. It helps. It progresses. It kicks the ball forward. It keeps the momentum going. And I didn't like it for that reason. And what's more is that as somebody who really likes Cam Newton, who likes watching Cam Newton play and his mastery on the field, I didn't like it because it cheapened what Cam Newton does on the field. Let me explain that. When you see Cam Newton running around, dabbing, doing the team photos, laughing, having a good time, yucking it up, it's easy to just think of him being as, oh, that's just his emotion at the time, which it may be. But I see it more as a guy who has things mastered. He's in control. He's the master of his own domain. And from there, he allows himself to have proper perspective about what he's doing. He's not going to be a robot because, you know what? I'm being good at this. I've mastered this. I know what it means really in the pantheon of things. I'm going to have some fun with it. It seems as if the feeling I got from Cam Newton this entire season was that's a guy who has things in perspective. He's really good and he's really smart to know that, all right, I'm just really good at this and I'm going to have some fun with it, because at the end of the day, it's football, it's a game, and I'm getting paid millions of dollars to play this game. So I'm going to have myself a good ass time. And that is an incredibly mature perspective to take. And I attributed that, maybe projected it, onto Cam Newton. Now, to see this, to see treating the press this way, and to see this display in the postgame press conference of Super Bowl 50, it cheapens what I thought he was. It changes it, because now I can't reconcile the two, because the same guy who is the master of his domain, who understands, who has, quote, proper perspective on things, that same guy probably wouldn't act as Cam Newton did. And so the very fact that Cam Newton acted the way he did tells me that, well, maybe he isn't that guy. Maybe he's not there yet, and what we really were seeing was just a childish-like, gargantuan human being dominating and wang-whipping a bunch of other gargantuan and heretofore dominant human beings, and just being childish about it and just going around and, ha ha ha, I'm going to rub it in your face because I'm better than you and blah, blah, blah. I attributed that more to a heightened perspective on things, a heightened understanding of one's place in the world. But now I can't help but feel that maybe that was giving him too much credit, because what we saw yesterday after the Super Bowl was childish. And childish, Cam Newton being childish, both explains his actions after the Super Bowl and his on-field antics. And I think that I'm upset, or I dislike it, because I really thought Cam was different. I really thought he was in a different place, a different space, and that allowed him to be fun, and that allowed him to do all the things that he does. But now it just kind of looks like you're just a child, man. Those things, there's no real meaning behind the dabbing, behind the dancing, behind the team pictures, other than what a 14, 15-year-old travel baseball team does to the opposing team when they're kicking their ass. It's, you know, it's the twist in the knife. It's it's rubbing it in people's faces and just, ha ha ha, I'm just going to show you how much better I am than you and beat it and let me laugh at you. And it kind of degrades the whole thing. Maybe Cam will get there. Maybe one day he will be able to achieve that which I have projected upon him. But right now, it just sucks. It just sucks because I thought something was one way, and now it's not. All right, we're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of wrestling. Don't worry. This isn't going to turn into another wrestling show, unless you want it to be, but I don't know. We'll see about that. But we're going to talk a little bit about wrestling, a little bit about Daniel Bryan and his retirement from the WWE. You've got the KMP show. We'll be right back.
KNP fans, be sure to head over to voicesofwrestling.com this week for an all-new episode of Shake Them Ropes. Each week, Rob McCarron and Jeff Hawkins bring you Shake Them Ropes, talking all things WWE and NXT. Rob and Jeff will talk all the latest news coming out of WWE, the news heading into NXT TakeOver, and get your thoughts on the build-up to WrestleMania 32. If you're into nostalgia, every week Rob and Jeff discuss a new match on the WWE.com list of the top 100 matches to see on WWE Network. We run through the greatest matches in the history of pro wrestling, and you can share your thoughts on Twitter at ShakeThemRopes. In addition to our weekly episodes, after every WWE pay-per-view, we also go live on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to the Voices of Wrestling YouTube at voicesofwrestling.com/YouTube, and you can follow along to a live video stream as Shake Them Ropes goes live after every WWE pay-per-view. So fans, do not miss all new episodes of Shake Them Ropes. Voicesofwrestling.com. That's voicesofwrestling.com. For the best in pro wrestling coverage and commentary, look no further than Voices of Wrestling. Hi everybody, Rob McCarron here, and at Voices of Wrestling, we specialize in coverage of wrestling in the US and abroad. New Japan Pro Wrestling, Pro Wrestling Noah, Dragon Gate, Revolution Pro Wrestling, Evolve, Ring of Honor, and yes, WWE and NXT. We have it all. Reviews of every major show. Podcasts that cover it all, including the flagship Voices of Wrestling podcast hosted by Rich Kraich and Joe Lanza. You won't get opinion this diverse from anyone else. Subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Watch our live shows on YouTube. And check out our daily reviews. All of this and more at voicesofwrestling.com.
Welcome back to the KMP Show. This segment is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek enables fans to quickly and easily discover the best deals for sports, concerts, and theater events. The company's interactive stadium maps, deal score, and comparison shopping experience provides fans with the buying intelligence needed to find the best prices from trusted ticket markets and purchase tickets seamlessly. Use deal score and SeatGeek's intuitive comparison shopping by visiting voicesofwrestling.com/SeatGeek today. That's voicesofwrestling.com/SeatGeek. All right, when we left off, I said we were going to talk a little bit about Daniel Bryan, and I said this was going to be a shorty, and so to keep it short, we're just going to dive right into it. I know that's kind of hard for me. Anybody that remembers the Lefty Show, my old daily podcast, or almost daily, keeping things contrite, concise, were a bit of a problem for me because I'm long-winded and I like to talk about things. And I do sometimes, you know what? I'm going to say it. I like the sound of my own voice. I think it sounds nice. I really do. I'm one of those people where I really try to not be a conceited prick. And really, I don't have much to be conceited about, but I really do try. I try to be humble to the point of self-deprecating, which maybe sometimes comes off as egotistical in some odd way, but I really, really try. I really try to temper my own view of myself and what I do. But you know what? In this one instance, I like the sound of my goddamn voice. I really do. I do. And if you know what? If you don't like it,
I don't give a fuck what you think, bitch.
I'm sorry. It's just that's the way it's got to be. I try not to be that, but it's a little bit hard. And if you don't like it,
basically fuck you.
Exactly. Thank you, Rich. See, he's here in spirit. See, he's right here.
We're live right now. Listen right now. Okay, you're not listening. Fuck it. We're done.
All right. Well, we've been going for a little bit, Rich. So I don't know why you're so you know, we're not live. What are you talking about?
Basically, fuck you.
No, I'm just trying to tell, man, we've been doing the show for a while. I mean, I've been hogging the mic and, you know, talking a lot. So maybe that's why you didn't get into the show as much, but that, you know, there's no reason to be upset with me.
Basically, fuck you.
Okay. You know what, dude? You're testing the boundaries right now, bro. We've got this show. I think we've got a thing here. I think we really do have a thing.
We're live right now. Listen right now. Okay, you're not listening.
Exactly. I want people to listen. I want people to listen and enjoy the show. But you know what? Your hostility, your open hostility is just...
Basically, fuck you.
No. I'm just trying to put on a good show. You know, I wanted to put aside what Lanza took me aside when we announced the show. You know, he came up to me and he was like, listen, dude, all right, there's some things you got to know about working with Rich. It's an arduous process. You got to be right on point. You can't do things that really upset him. And I told him, fuck you. You know, I said, fuck you, because he was trying to railroad the show. He was trying to derailroad the show. And I said, no, man, that ain't happening. But you know what, Rich? You know what? You're putting it real close. You're putting your hand real close to the flame, buddy. I'm just saying. You gotta tone it down a bit. All right. So when Daniel Bryan today announced on Twitter that he, Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson, however you may know him, is retiring from the WWE, and he said, I will find it here because I had it up and then I accidentally closed the stupid window because I'm an idiot. That's what happens sometimes, kiddies. This is live radio or podcasting, whatever it is. This is Daniel Bryan today on Twitter. Due to medical reasons, effective immediately, I am announcing my retirement. Tonight on Raw, I'll have a chance to elaborate. Hashtag gratitude. That is from Daniel Bryan today announcing his retirement from the WWE. And again, this is probably not going to become a wrestling-centric show. Rich already does a ton of wrestling talk, and I'm sure the last thing he wants is to hear my stupid thoughts on WWE, which is really all I'm willing to watch at this point. So he doesn't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it. We're just going to leave it at that. But it's interesting that Daniel Bryan, well, it's convenient for me, but Daniel Bryan's retirement is ostensibly due to his myriad of medical issues, chief of which are concussion problems. Daniel Bryan has had a history of acute concussion syndrome, or I believe it's acute concussive syndrome. The clinical diagnosis for what is commonly referred to as a concussion. He's had that a few times in his career since joining the WWE, and when he was climbing the ranks of the indie wrestling world, who knows how many he may or may not have suffered. But during his time at WWE, he's had more than a handful of concussions, missing time here and there because, gets a concussion, comes back, it's another one, got to take time off, comes back, it's another one, or is set back in some other way. Finally today, it is coming out now that he's been tested. You know, they look at his brain, and other doctors have basically told him, Daniel, you should probably stop, or Brian, you should probably stop. This isn't good for you. If you continue and you repeatedly concuss yourself, that's not good. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that people need to know and understand, because this is something that has gone through the rank and file football pundits and talk shows for a long time. Concussions do not equal chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE, is the accumulation of tau proteins in the brain matter, which eventually can cause things like early onset dementia. The specific mechanism is decreased blood flow in the brain, and parts of your brain begin to die off, and then you slowly go insane. You at 60, 50, sometimes it happens in your 50s, you slowly go insane. Dementia onsets way sooner in people with chronic traumatic encephalopathy than actual just elderly dementia patients. And the key here is chronic. Not that chronic. Not that chronic, Snoop. Okay? So just chronic. Chronic. Find that chronic. The key here is chronic. Now, chronic, not that, I keep wanting to go there. Chronic has its own clinical definition. You have, even if you have a bunch of, a cluster of a certain type of injury, does not necessarily mean that your injury is chronic. The key for chronic traumatic encephalopathy and what people, what the science has found, at least in football players, when they do, when they put accelerometers on people's helmets and they can kind of have a good idea of what the brain is doing inside the skull when the head accelerates at this angle in this direction on this vector and then is suddenly accelerated negatively across the reverse axis, we can guess that, okay, the brain smacks into the skull and inputs this amount of energy, and that accruing over time, happening more and more, is what gets into developing these tau proteins. Concussions aren't necessarily that. Concussions maybe can cause CTE, but concussions are more another symptom of chronic head trauma. And that is what the WWE is incredibly worried about. It's not the fact that people are getting concussions. The worry is that the presence of the concussions indicates that the very job of wrestling, of putting on a professional wrestling show as it is scripted and as it is choreographed now, creates enough subconcussive traumatic events that people are indeed do need to be worried about their long-term brain health. Daniel Bryan should be worried about his long-term brain health, but not because he's had concussions, not because the concussions are the thing that are going to develop the tau proteins. He should be worried about his long-term brain health because the concussions are yet another symptom of something else. You are putting your brain through trauma. It culminates from time to time, like standing waves add, and it reaches a peak, and you have acute concussive syndrome, and a diagnosed concussion. But that baseline, what is going on? What is causing those, that standing wave to be diagnosed in a concussion? And that's your wrestling. Your wrestling is probably a compartmentalized summation of all these subconcussive hits. And you should probably be a little bit worried about your long-term brain health, and you should, as a result, stop wrestling. So the WWE, much like the NFL and the NHL to a lesser degree, soccer, football, they probably have it a little bit worse than the NHL, what with all the headers that people go through. But the WWE is deathly afraid of it being found that just wrestling creates enough subconcussive hits to, one, culminate in a spat of concussions, and two, cause long-term brain dysfunction in wrestlers who have wrestled for a long time, a la Daniel Bryan, a la Chris Benoit, a la other people. And here's the interesting part. The next, probably from now for the next 10 years, is going to be really interesting, maybe 15, because when wrestling became a televised event, when it rose from the ranks of not a traveling freak show per se, but a traveling carny-like event, which is the genesis of all the wrestling speak, you know, put over and shoot and work and all that stuff. When wrestling rose from that and became a televised, it became an event unto itself. Again, this was, you know, probably, I don't know, Rich is, whoever's the a better wrestling historian, I'm sure Rich knows better. But I want to say in the 70s, probably is right when that happened. And then it got into the 80s and you get Hulkster and all that. Those guys are starting to die. And as sad as it is, what people need to do, what really needs to be done is those brains, when those guys die, need to be studied. Because those guys will tell you, just like the NFL players like Ken Stabler, who recently died and was diagnosed posthumously with chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is currently the only method for diagnosis, sadly. These guys are starting to die off. And their brains, when they die, need to be studied. And it's going to be interesting because we will see how the WWE handles that. How do they handle guys dying and perhaps having early onset dementia? How do they handle the families if they want to donate the brains to research universities and hospitals who are studying chronic traumatic encephalopathy? Is the WWE going to fight that? Is the WWE insidious enough, as they are the biggest game in town? Of course, this is a problem across all professional wrestling. Are they insidious enough to try to tell the families, hey, look, here's $500,000. Don't donate his brain. Because that would be, the NFL can absorb it. The NFL can absorb having to pay past players, retired players, $750, $850, $1+ billion. They can absorb that. They can afford it. The WWE can't. The WWE is in a precarious position financially, especially with the launch of the WWE Network and how that is performing or not performing, depending on your perspective. The WWE can't afford that. Vince McMahon can't afford it. The shareholders can't. The shareholders won't. And if the WWE is found liable, they're all going to skate. And that's going to kill the cash flow of the WWE. That's going to kill it might kill the WWE. That may be the death knell for WWE. And it's going to be really interesting over the next 10, 15 years when guys like Hulk Hogan, Chris Benoit died early, but wrestlers of that era, when they start dying, okay, when Jake the Snake dies, his brain needs to be studied. And people may be really, really scared about what they find. Because if there are the tau proteins, if there is chronic traumatic encephalopathy, and if there are enough brains donated, this could be really, really bad for the WWE, because it's not just one brain. But when it's patterned, when it's brain after brain after brain, and now these guys who went from the carny days of yore, now the guys who, when wrestling became a produced, when it was a show, when it was an event, when it became your job was wrestling, now the WWE's got a problem on their hands if these guys all turn out to start developing CTE. And the worst part is, which may be the saving grace for the WWE, like it will be the saving grace for the NFL. The worst part is we don't know where and we don't know when. We don't know when you pass that threshold, which whatever it is, it's probably different, certainly different for everybody, but we don't know where to even look for that threshold. Is it total energy input into brain matter? Total concussive energy, total kinetic energy input to brain matter? Is there a threshold past which you start to see CTE develop at higher and higher rates? Is it time-based? Is it if you have enough time in between even sub-concussive hits, like, say, house shows or, a Monday event and then a Tuesday event, and you're not doing anything but lifting weights and tanning in between, maybe you'll be okay. We don't know. The research is still very much in its infancy. And what might save the WWE from being at least strictly liable is prove it was our wrestling. Prove it. Good luck. Like if you've ever seen a civil action, trying to prove that the trichloroethylene dumped into the groundwater by Beatrice Foods or by one of their subsidiaries, prove when it got to the well and when it was then ingested by the people of Woburn, Massachusetts. Good luck. Go ahead and that was what The attorney for the families sadly allowed that to happen for various, I don't know, lawyery reasons. But the WWE and the NFL are going to say, or this is what I would argue, prove it was our wrestling. Prove it was our football. Prove it was that, and not your wrestling in high school or your football in high school, your football in college, your indie wrestling. Prove it was our wrestling or our football and not your previous work. Prove it. We'll pay if you can prove it, but you probably can't. And that, for now, is the saving grace of the WWE. But still, if you can establish, if there is established a pattern where old wrestlers begin to die and each subsequent brain or a statistically significant portion of each subsequent brain comes up CTE, 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 the WWE may have themselves a problem. And it'll be interesting, but you know what? Good for Daniel Bryan. If he has researched, if he has sought out information and tried to make the best decision for himself, his family, and his future, good for him. And to the people, you know what? A lot of people I see are making noise about Daniel Bryan's contract and non-compete clauses and all that stuff. Unless the contract is incredibly poorly drafted, he signed it. And unless the terms are unconscionable or totally unreasonable, he signed it. He was free not to sign. Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson, was free to remain a Ring of Honor or whatever he was doing on the indie scene, free to remain the highest and best or most popular indie wrestler. Bryan Danielson sat down with his agent, hopefully who was also an attorney, or some other attorney, handed them the contract, and hopefully it was explained to Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson, this is what you are signing away here. And he said yes. And he took their money and he cashed their checks and he's got his Twitter followers and he took their endorsement deals. I see right now on his Twitter page, there's a Tide Pods commercial that he's pimping. He took their money. So, you know what? I reserve the right if the terms are unconscionable, but dude signed his own contract. You know who we didn't sign a contract with, but who's still absolutely amazing, is Fathead, baby. This segment or this show has been brought to you by Fathead. Buy one, get one free right now at Fathead, plus take an additional 15% off everything else by using our code BOGOFREE. That's B-O-G-O free. Just go to voicesofwrestling.com/fathead. That's voicesofwrestling.com/fathead. Well, I thank you all for joining and dealing with this, well, what was supposed to be a shorty K&P show. Rich will be back. We will be doing a show together. We will be recording, as I understand it, think Tuesday of this week. We will be recording an episode or two, but be on the lookout for this. Every once in a while, you'll get either Rich solo, me solo for a K&P shorty, just to do our part to make sure we're bringing you the best content, as much content as we can. As we thank you for sharing the show. You're really helping out the show when you share it with people and be like, hey, check these guys out. You post it on Reddit. You post it on your forums. Whatever. It's great. Keep doing that. Keep helping the show grow. We will climb the ranks of new and noteworthy in sports and recreation on iTunes, and then we'll be on the front page and doing all sorts of good stuff. So we thank you all for helping the show grow. I look forward to, and I think I can speak for Rich, we look forward to keep putting on a great show for you week in and week out, 2, 3, maybe 4. We'll see how the sharing numbers do. The more there are, the more shows we can do, because then we can sell ads and we can sell this and that and all the other things, and it'll be a great time. So check out the K&P show. You can search us on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe to the feed. You're probably already subscribed to the feed, but just make sure you are. You can also follow the show on Twitter at K&P show, and you can also follow me at John's Voices as well. Thank you guys for joining. We'll catch you next time. We are out, or I am out. Bye.